Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
And welcome back. We are live. Taxation is theft. And I am your presidential candidate, Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, running for president of the United States in 2020. Very exciting stuff. The campaign is doing really awesome right now. We're working together with a lot of volunteers. There are very exciting big things happening. We are moving forward at an amazing pace. So if you're interested in getting involved, go ahead and send me a message, and I'll wrap you into it. I have with me today Eric Gertz, and he got my attention because he posted the other day that he was starting a Kickstarter with these taxation is theft pins, which I put a link in the comments in the description of the video, so you can go check that out. It's a pin. It's like one of these little guys down here, and he's starting a little Kickstarter. And I was like, hey, that's a cool project. Why don't we talk? So, welcome. How's it going,
Dan? A pleasure having me. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I guess first let's talk about this project. What kind of got you, what made you kind of decide to do this, get into this entrepreneurial, venture?
Well, thanks, Dan. Historically I've been a graphic designer and an artist for, you know, my whole life and my whole career. And I've noticed that recently pins and patches have been a pretty lucrative business, and I've been doing a lot of research into that. But like, as you know, a libertarian, anarcho-capitalist, I kind of like to incorporate however way I can, maybe artwork or something wearable. How can we get this message out there that people can see? And one of my previous projects I did before, years ago, probably 2011, was the Voluntarism Bracelets. You can find them at facebook.com/voluntarismbracelets. But they're just like a black and yellow bracelet that says Voluntarism. And back in the day, it was a great way to wear something around your wrist and it starts conversations. And I kind of wanted to capitalize on that and do it again now. But like, I thought about what's a really good, a kind of a good visual, like some type of image that would be kind of provocative. And I've always loved taxation is theft. I mean, it's such a powerful statement in just three words. It really crosses all the boundaries and every kind of persuasion of libertarian, no matter who you are, they kind of rotate to it. But the best part of what I like about it is if you take it to its fullest extent, it could bring some really good conversations. And a lot of people, the first time they see it, you know, they might even ask, like, how much taxation, or what is it? What do you mean theft? Or, you know, I mean, I think you're pretty much in your audience is well acquainted with, you know, with the possibilities behind it. So, and then when I think originally I was inspired by a meme that had a very similar imagery. So I wanted to change it around, make it pretty good for a pin and patch. And having the little like 1930s thug guy point a gun at you with an IRS paper in his hand, I think it speaks volumes. And just like I said, the three words alone, you know, it's going to challenge whoever sees it. So when we're out there in real life, you know, I think all libertarians are kind of in their own way, maybe like an activist. But on the internet, when we're adorning our fedora and we're chomping away at the keyboards, but in real life, we might actually meet somebody who wants to talk about it. And I think everybody is passionate enough to talk about it and then maybe what taxation means to them and why is it theft, etc.
Absolutely. So you mentioned fedoras, and I have to ask, who wears a fedora? Because that's kind of a funny hat.
Like, it is.
Why would anybody wear a fedora?
Not as cool as your hat, man. But yeah, it's, fedora is the neck bearded hat of choice on the internet anyway, you know, when we're on our armchair destroying the universe from a safe distance on the internet.
So I'm just trying to pull up the website here, just so we can show you what this actually looks like. So this is the Kickstarter page. The prices are in Mexican pesos.
Excellent.
Let me see if I can switch that, because it switches automatically. But this is the shit I have to go through every day, because the internet, as much as people give credit to the internet, it's really kind of stupid. Because there's like all these, you know, when you go back and forth with these browser headers, and I'm going to get like nerdy for a minute here, but when you go back and forth sending requests for a page and then it responds with all this page, there's all these headers built into, you know, it's like hidden information that says, you know, when you get a page back, hold on to this page. It's not going to change for 30 days and then you don't have to keep asking us for it. Right. Right. And it's designed to make the user experience much better overall. But for some reason, they still haven't figured out when you access a website, what language to serve it to you in. There are headers that say, like, I want this language, but all the websites out there don't work on it. They try to go based on your IP address, and so that's why everything ends up in Mexican pesos, because they're like, oh, well, you're in Mexico. Why wouldn't you want to buy in pesos? Well, because I'm shipping to a U.S. address, maybe, or yeah.
Right.
Or I'm using a VPN. Oh, we're going to put everything in Swiss francs for you. Okay, here we go. So we've got 17 backers on there, 15 days to go. And these are what the pins look like. They look pretty awesome. I'm guessing the one that's here on the denim, is that, did you Photoshop that in?
Yeah, all those are digital renderings.
Great job with that. That looks legit. I'm always like fascinated by the quality of like some of the mockups and designs that, you know, people make for these Kickstarter projects, because a lot of them, it's hard to tell if they're real or not.
I guess that's the idea. You really want to live in the fantasy here.
Right. Cause it, and like, you know, some people will say, oh, that's deceptive. But at the same time, it's like, no, it's really, you know, I mean, shit, look at McDonald's and like, you know, what do you get when you versus what's on the picture?
Right.
You know, that's evil because they know it's not going to look anything like it. Whereas here it's, you know, it's pretty damn close. So you can pledge and you get your pins, and that's pretty much it. It's a Kickstarter. So I thought that was an awesome project because, you know, like you said, it's taxation is theft. We got to get this word out there to everybody. I myself obviously like the phrase. So that's that. So if you're interested in one of these pins, go ahead and check these out. And once you get them, of course, take your pictures, upload them, put them on Instagram, do all that kind of stuff, and tag Eric so that he can, you know, help him sell more of them, help get the word out, all that kind of stuff.
Awesome. Dan, yeah, I've noticed that the response has been overwhelming really quickly. You know, people already met the requirement for me to start production.
Awesome.
Which is really cool, but it doesn't mean that you still can't buy them. In fact, like right now I have the kind of Kickstarter price, but when the Kickstarter is over in about 15 days, it'll go up to about $2 more. But for the most part, I'm really about kind of getting the word out there. And this is a kind of a chance everybody can help fund this project. But also, like you said, for future projects too, you know, I'm always looking for ways how to incorporate my own art and my own design and my own kind of skill set into the kind of like malaise of the kind of libertarian world that we live in, and kind of getting the word out there for other people. So this is just my first dip into that sphere. And the response has been really overwhelming. I'm really happy to see that.
Awesome. Yeah, it's really great. And, you know, I know there's, it's interesting in the libertarian circle, because this all, you know, this all costs money, of course. Of course, people who hate taxes typically are like, I don't want to spend my money on frivolous shit. But at the same time, it's like, you know, this is something that really helps. You know, this is like, it's kind of like, you know, investing in your future, not to sound, you know, cliche, but it's, you know, that's really what this is. Like, you know, anybody who puts their time or energy into just anything having to do with libertarian, that's really what we're doing. You know, time and money, it's really the same thing. It's a resource. For some reason, letting go with money is always a little bit more difficult. So, and man, I know that because I'm running for president and asking for donations. So, it's tough. What's interesting is, you know, it takes money to get this message out there. And what's really interesting to see is that so many people from the other parties, like the Democrats and Republicans, are just, they're just always there, like bankrolling these guys, like, oh yeah, $100 here, take it. And it's, you know, it's kind of weird, but that's, you know, it's like, yeah, you're paying the robbers. Like, yeah, I want to make sure that the robber stays in charge so that, you know, when I get my next tax bill, I get robbed again.
Right.
It's so crazy to me.
But yeah, they have like infinite supplies of money, those kind of guys. But something like me is, I mean, I put the starter pretty low. Essentially, $200 is not really that much, but that covers the cost of production. And then everything after that, you know, we got a pin in the universe that you can get that wasn't there before.
That's awesome. So let's talk. This is probably going to get controversial.
All right.
Feel free to change the subject if you want. But, you know, as running a business, these are conversations that I have. Where are you getting these produced? Are they made in the U.S.? Are they made outside of the U.S.? What's kind of your...
Oh, that's a great question. I love China. China all the time. Number one.
China, but... China, China.
You know it. However, I do recognize that, I don't know why, but some people might have a problem with that. But let me just remind you, okay, that I've talked to, in this last year, I've done a lot of research and development in the PIN community. And from what my understanding is, in the U.S., there's like very, very, very little, if not supposedly none, of the factories that make pins anymore because of, number one, I think there's some the pollution problem or something. Mm-hmm. There's some human health issue that makes it impossible. And number two, if you really think that somebody making even minimum wage in a factory with these meticulously tiny details is going to be able to affordably make a pin versus in China, you're out of your mind. So that's why they're almost all exclusively made in China. And any American company that says they're American is most likely just outsourcing from China.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. There's, you know, a lot of companies, it's like buried in the small print on their website that's, you know, basically made in China.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. And, you know, that's an interesting topic too, because a lot of people think, you know, they'll go either way, right? The Democrats will say you're abusing factory workers because you're paying them pennies on the dollars. And the Republicans will say, no, you're taking away American jobs. And it's like both of those arguments are completely fundamentally flawed. If you're paying someone even 10 cents an hour in China, you're actually improving their quality of life. Not by much, but I mean, the cost of living there is almost nothing in some areas. So you're
compared to how they were living before previously, too.
Exactly. That's, you know, this is like, it's an interesting topic because, like, you know, I'm always talking to Democrats, especially with the taxation is theft message, because they're the ones who usually object to it. But
they need to hear that the most.
Yeah. But what's interesting is, like, I've been learning how to talk to them so that they understand that, you know, because here's the typical libertarian. The typical libertarian is, but if we don't have taxes, how will we take care of the poor? And then the typical libertarian says, fuck the poor. How do I care? Tell them to get a job. And the reality is, like, well, actually, the libertarian solutions will actually help a lot of people who, you know, who are in poverty. I mean, people are being taxed into poverty by the government. So, you know, you talk to Democrats and you find the right way to message them and help them understand. And they're like, oh, yeah, this actually, like, makes sense. Like, so you're not just trying to screw everybody over. and that's, I think that's like the most important thing. That's probably like the biggest struggle I think the Libertarian Party has right now.
Yeah, you know, making noble, wealthy Democrats understand, like, the poor, I think those are two disconnected things, especially when they're so always grandstanding for the poor, but they won't take the subway with poor people or something.
Right.
But one thing I've noticed about Democrats when you explain that to them is, like, I know they think that we're like, fuck the poor. But quite frankly, there are poor libertarians and hoboitarians out there and people living like, you know, Thoreau. And I ain't going to hate on that. In fact, if you're in voluntary poverty, more power to you. And if you want to be a filthy rich capitalist, hey, that's awesome, too. However, what do you really think when we want to, like, have a stateless society or a minimarchist society or a low tax society, whatever we want, they think we're out of our minds. We want to fuck poor people. What about poor people who have this belief, too? Do they just want to fuck themselves? And
right.
I think ultimately what they need to understand is that we believe in our hearts, using like the science of economics, we believe firmly that this would benefit poor people as well as rich people and would make us all like better, whereas their system is not anywhere realistic and never really has that outcome.
Right. Yeah, it's really, you know, it's the politician telling you the sky is falling and you're if you're not poor now, you will be poor soon if you don't vote us.
Right.
And yeah, it's like then they come in with these policies and they say like, you know, oh yeah, we're gonna take everything you have. Wait a minute, I thought you were gonna give us free stuff. You're gonna what do you mean you're gonna take from us? Yeah, it's really interesting to see. And like that's another interesting distinction that we need to kind of be conscious of in our conversations is when we say Democrats, are we talking about the Democrat politicians or the Democrat voters? Because the voters are usually, you know, well-intentioned people who are basically sold some bullshit dream. And then you've got the politicians who are, you know, they're just all corrupt and criminal as the other side, coming up with these dreams to get, you know, to do the sale and get the money.
Right. You know, one thing I've noticed about Democrats recently watching that 2-hour marathon, man, what a waste of time that was. However, I've noticed a bit of a fracture in their kind of ideology. They have the old Democrats, which are kind of almost, to me, almost identical to the Republicans in some circumstances, right? Mm-hmm. But like, there's the new kind of Democrat that come, like we're kind of be more progressive now, or we're kind of leaning towards that. In general, I think they were all kind of promoting the free stuff. That was like the main
right
kind of topic of the show, but some people, the newer ones more than everything, are going to the more extremes. And I think they're getting kind of stomped out by the older Democrats in general because, they, you know, they're still kind of grasping onto their power and they still have a lot of old kind of ways of thinking. So it's kind of like millennials versus boomers I'm watching on stage, essentially. They're fighting over that voter base.
Yeah.
And trying to maintain their relevancy, too. I mean, some of their ideas are so kind of like antiquated, but the things that they talk about, I look at like, why did voters vote in 2016, and I look at like the top three reasons, and those weren't even really that much discussed. So they're kind of out of touch. And I'm watching more when I see the show. I don't really think any of them has a chance against Trump. I'm not a big Trump fan,
right,
but I don't think any of them even have a slightest chance. However, what I'm watching is not only like a cash grab of being part of a campaign because they're getting, you know, millions of dollars to run. Period. That might be an awesome lifestyle, but and also too is that they're setting their position up for 2024. They have to make a name for themselves. Even if they think I'm not going to fucking win, that's embarrassing that I'm not even going to be close, I still have to make a name for myself because this is my career of being a political kind of person, and I have to be fighting for my position for 2024. So that's what they're doing on there. They're pandering to the people for the next slot, I guess.
Right. Yeah, and it makes total sense. I mean, you look back at the past, 20 or 30 years, and, you know, nobody's beat an incumbent. It's, you know, that's just the way it is. And
very difficult.
I think part of it is it's so weird because people are afraid of change, right? So, you know, as much as they say, yeah, we want hope and change, they're afraid of change unless change is inevitable. Like when Obama couldn't get reelected, because, you know, he served two terms. So now it's like, well, if we got to change, I guess the Democrats didn't do what we wanted. So let's change completely and try something completely different. So I think, you know, realistically, that's what's going to continue to happen. That's what's happened for like 30 or 40 years. We're going to see two terms of Republicans, and then we're, you know, Trump's going to get a second term. Then we're going to get a Democrat, and they're going to serve for two terms.
I have no idea what to expect, man, in 2024. Are we going full socialist, or are we going kind of still old world Democrat? I don't know, but the pendulum will swing, and how it'll swing. I mean, the Democratic Party itself is bankrupt, and they're kind of out of touch. I don't know what they're going to expect. I don't know who's going to a rising star in the next 4 years. I don't know what Trump's going to do. You know, I think at the end of the 8 years of Bush, people were like running desperately to Obama, not because of his message of peace and all that, but I think it was more likely the fact that anything we had our 8 years, you know, with Bush, and now we're willing to, you know, to do it with Obama. And then after Obama, everyone, you know, not only just Obama, but I think in general, but like maybe the social justice or whatever kind of emerged, you know, political correctness kind of gave birth to a Trump figure just to kind of like as a fuck you, you know, to the left in general. But what are we going to do in the next, let's say, 4 years? I mean, it seems like right now Trump is staving off a war with Iran, you know, and I don't know what's going to happen. And maybe he's like waiting for after the election, you know, which is might be a better move. But if he does something crazy or stupid in the next 4 years, I don't know who's going to what rising figure with a small mustache is going to come and replace him on the left side. You know, I don't know.
Right. So I'm looking at this historical youth voter turnout. And so I'm trying to get an idea of, you know, the average age of voters. And so basically
60 and up.
No, 18 to 29% makes up about 45%.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. So where I was going to go with this is, you know, so the first time I voted for president, it was for Obama. Yes, I'm ashamed of it now. okay. And, you know, this is like I would have been about 20. I didn't know much about politics. All I knew is I was starting to watch, you know, I'd kind of like seen what's starting to happen with the housing crisis. I was living in Los Angeles, so everything was ridiculously expensive. It was, you know, the rent was too damn high. And so all I knew was like all these problems, and I hear, you know, on the radio, everyone's saying it's Bush's fault. And, you know, and we had all these wars and everything since 9/11. So I was like, yeah, it has to be Bush's fault. So I was like, let's get him out of there. It has to be the Republicans, because when you boil it down to like, it's like super simple, like, because that's how we think, right? Very simple terms. If you boil politics down super simple, it's the blue team or the red team. And it's like, well, this red team sucks. Let's vote for the blue team. And that was my, that was my pattern of thought. And so now looking at these numbers, if almost half of the voters are in that age range, then, you know, now 8 years later, those people will have grown up, you know, they will have spent, you know, from, let's say, from age 10 to 18 or from 15 to 23, something like that. They will have spent all of that time under Trump.
Yeah.
And so now they're going to be like, yeah, the Republicans suck. They're doing all these terrible things. They're going to, you know, every policy, you know, as much as they say, yeah, well, you know, Obama did it. It was an Obama policy, but Trump just continued it. Like, it doesn't matter. They see it as a Trump policy. And so they're going to say, we have to get rid of these people. We need a Democrat. and I think that's really like what's basically swinging this pendulum back and forth is everyone, like people like us, we get so fucking sick of it that we don't even vote. You know, by the time we're, you know, I actually didn't even vote in 2016 because I was like, okay, Ron Paul didn't make it. Well, Ron Paul wasn't even in it, I guess, at that point. And then Gary Johnson just like totally pissed me off. I was like, I can't support this guy.
Yeah, thanks, Weld.
Yeah, it was. Even that, like, I just have this personal thing with him where, like, you know, I could tell he wasn't a taxationist theft guy, which I was okay with until he said it during his acceptance speech at the convention, and I was like, wait a minute, now you're a lying panderer. Because
he's a politician all of a sudden.
Yeah, I'm like, man, that's not cool. So it's, yeah, that is, so I was just like, man, screw it. I'm just like, I can't vote for anybody. I might as well not vote. Trump's going to get it anyway. You know how it goes. So, yeah.
Not a bad thing, man. A lot of people did the same thing. I mean, I don't expect everyone to be on the libertarian page. I think we're in a very privileged position because I think we're the smartest people out there. And we have like, we're in the middle. So we get to see, we can criticize both the left and right. And we have that good perspective. But I think a majority of Americans just were like, Hillary Clinton was disgusting. All her dirty laundry was everywhere, and we can see it. And I think she was more confident that, you know, Trump would be the clown, the Pied Piper, that would kind of be the big distraction for her big moment. And end up, the people were just either so sick of her or they were so sick of the political establishment that this, like, celebrity billionaire, you know, just destroyed the entire Republican Party and end up becoming president, which is hilarious in a sense because I guess, you know, people get what they deserve. They want to have a Biff president. We got it. Now what? Right.
Right.
So we roll the dice. She sucked. But like, are the younger generation going to see Trump as this negative figure and grow up and then, you know, be Democrat? Maybe. I mean, probably yes. But I can say as somebody who grew up during the, you know, fuck Bush kind of era where like Green Day is number one album, you know, American Idiot, everyone wearing fuck Bush T-shirts and stuff. But those people grow up, too. And they get older and they go to college and they get a nice fat paycheck and all of a sudden that paycheck's gone. So, you know, if you're young enough to be a Democrat or old enough to be Republican, whatever the saying goes, you get that first big paycheck and you have to pay through the teeth to the government. Some of those people say, all right, you know, everyone has a line. And a lot of people with Obamacare was their line. I know friends of mine that were diehard, like all for Obamacare. This is going to be good. This is cheap. And they end up getting really fucked. And they were like, fuck this. And that was their catalyst, you know, for them. You know, I know some people historically in the kind of nutrition world, the fitness community, to them, it was like learning about nutrition, fitness, kind of exercise, and then realizing the FDA was full of shit. And that's how they kind of get turned on. You know, everyone has their own little kind of line that get crossed. So there might be a lot of people who are against Trump now that are younger. I've been surprised now that all of a sudden this is kind of blows my mind that Republicans are kind of like the counterculture now. So you're almost like a punk rock, like Republican or something. You know, you're like against the grain just for being a Republican, which to me is mind blowing because it wasn't too long ago. I remember in the 90s that it was kind of the opposite. You know, you were like the left kind of side was against the man, you know, pro freedom, pro rights, and then kind of leave me be kind of feeling. And then that somehow warped into like, I hate the president, but I love government and we love taxes and we love government programs.
Nobody should have guns but the police.
Yeah, man.
But
when
I guess they've always kind of been there. Well, they've always been, yeah, they've always
kind of
been.
They love the cops, man. I thought they were against the cops, like, because they were always busting them for drugs, kind of hippie kind of.
Well, yeah, that's the big thing. That inconsistency has always been there, too. Only the cops should have guns, but they've always hated the cops because the cops are always, you know, against the minorities. Yeah. I mean, well, that's the feeling I got anyway, because I grew up in you know, Los Angeles being, you know, like California, right? It's all blue.
Right.
And then I would see, you know, all the riots that went up against the Rodney King. Like, I grew up, like, around that.
Wow. And
so I guess maybe I just kind of associated that Democrats were more anti-police. But, yeah, like, the Republicans are kind of the same. They're like, you know, come and take it. But at the same time, they're like, yeah, thin blue line.
Yeah, right.
So it's – and I think, you know, a lot of it has to do with, like, just fear and psychology. I mean – if you think about it, it's like, yeah, I want to stand up to the police. Yeah, I want to shoot anybody that comes to try to take my guns. But then it's like when they come to try it, it's like, okay, I'm outnumbered. My neighbors aren't helping me. Here you go.
Yeah, I've noticed those stark contradictions on both sides. Recently, I just saw that Luke Radowski is over there in front of the White House and some communists were burning an American flag. And I've noticed the burning of the flag, it doesn't move me. You know, I know it burns people's hearts and they get all passionate about it, but I've kind of cured myself of that nonsense. However, they're doing it not with the intent of making any type of statement. They're just doing it to hurt feelings. That's right. They know what they're doing and they're making people angry, whatever. But there were a communist group and there was, I guess, like an alt-right group there. I don't know if Proud Boys are there or whatever. Some opposite group was there to, you know, antagonize that group. And while they were doing that, a big scuffle happened. People were screaming, you know, a flag got in flames. And then all of a sudden, like, the cops got there. And the irony for me is watching, like, I couldn't, was more American. Communists living in the world, like, the world's first world, most, like, richest, highest GDP, complaining that America's never great. Or is it the cops shoving people, like, innocent random people, throwing them around and screaming and condescending at everybody? And then, like, all the alt-right guys, like, thanking them for their service. I'm like, they just shoved you and called you stupid, and you're thanking them for their service.
Thank you. This boot is so delicious. Yeah, it's insane. But, you know, I think, you know, it's – I made this kind of a live stream earlier a couple of weeks ago where I talked about, like, preconditioned responses to, like, anything. And I think that's got a large part of it too. Like, if your preconditioned response is like police good, then, you know, no matter what a police officer does, you're going to figure out some way to justify that. And we see this all the time, right? Like, well, we didn't see what happened before the video started, or, you know, or yeah, but he was breaking the law. But then it's the same thing. Like, you know, it's the same thing with racism is actually the reason I did that one. You know, because people are like, we have these preconditioned responses and we have these, like, preconditioned associations in our head of, you know, like, I gave this example, right? Close your eyes and picture a prisoner. And then, like, okay, once you have that picture of that prisoner in your head, now tell me what color he is. And it's like, you know, and on average, most people are probably going to say black because statistically there are more black prisoners. That doesn't mean you're necessarily racist intentionally, but it could mean that there's some sort of subconscious racism that you have built in just because of the facts of society. And yeah. You know, what do you do with this information? You really need to kind of learn how your mind operates. And this is where a lot of people are into, like, psychedelics and that sort of thing. of course, you don't need that to be able to do this, but from what I hear, it helps. You know, to like figure out how your own brain operates and why you make decisions that you make, like even when they're unconscious decisions. And it's really amazing, like, you know, when you start figuring yourself out like that, it's really amazing what you're capable of, because then you have the ability to change yourself and correct yourself and make yourself better from decisions that you say, like, oh, yeah, that was. You know, it's like when a parent talks to a kid and they're like, yeah, was that a good decision? But it's like actually thinking about, okay, how did you arrive at this decision? And mm-hmm. what are all the factors like? And it's like, you know, it's really interesting. I don't know. I'm probably like talking crazy stuff.
No, Dan, you made a good point, too. And I think another thing that people kind of get swept away in is the kind of the party position. And I've noticed that when we talked about kind of left, right over the years, it's kind of things flip-flopping and kind of changing around, you know, between the counterculture, between, you know, who loves the government more. Another thing, too, I noticed is that, like, going back in time, the Democrats during, you know, the 8 years of Obama, for example, they've always been kind of against immigration, just not openly, but their actions. I mean, Obama, he deported more people in history. Right. In the Latin community, he's, you know, the deporter in chief. We're talking about more than any other president combined. But, you know, it only seems like only now we have a Republican president, it's an issue. So whenever I see people like on Occupy Democrats or something talking about this, I'm like, well, thank you. I'm so glad you've become a politically aware now as a Republican president. It's been lonely these last 8 years. But, you know, you've just now become political. Congratulations. But what do you think about this? You know, you see somebody in a cage. The cage wasn't built overnight. People have been in cages for some time now, and now you've just been exposed to it.
Right.
But ironically enough, you go back in time a little bit longer, and you have that Vox interview with Bernie Sanders, where you can Google it, where he says, oh, open borders, that's a Koch brothers right-wing thing, you know? And he was criticizing the right for liking open borders because we like to have the cheap labor, because they're slaves or whatever. So, you know, you kind of, depending on what the party says, you know, the people kind of, they kind of go with it. And on the opposite end, you see someone like Trump. He says, ban bump stocks. And people like throw their NRA hats in the air and they cheer. You know, he says, I'm thinking about getting rid of silencers, maybe even due process. And the Republicans are like, how? Yeah, that's awesome. Hell yeah.
Right.
I mean, if it was Obama just talking about it, people would be up in arms and burning effigies and collecting guns. And, you know,
well,
so it seems like what.
It's like whatever, you know, whatever happens, the Democrats are always, if there's a Democrat in power, they're always mm-hmm. going to look for ways to say why this is good. And if it's a Republican, they're always going to look for ways to say why it's bad. And it's the exact opposite with the Republicans. It's,
yeah,
you know, whatever happens, whatever they do, because ultimately, I mean, people like us know they're both, you know, they're different wings of the same bird. They're fighting for the same cause, which is bigger government. They're going to do things a little bit differently, but ultimately they want bigger government. And these two parties are just like fighting over, hey, who gets to be in charge?
Yeah. Yeah. And then who can do it, I guess, who can sell it better, you
right.
know? And if you look at what they say and what they do are two different things. And ultimately, even if we had like an outsider Trump president, right? He was not political. He was, you know, different. He was the gamble. But in the end, you know, the people he hires, the swamp that he drained, he just refilled it up with another swamp. We're seeing some people have been in government for decades doing the same things that I only wonder what would happen if it was any other candidate. You know, if it was a Jeb Bush or if it was even a Hillary Clinton, you know, in fact, if it was a Hillary Clinton right now, would we even would we have a wall and no one would be talking about it? She'd just have the wall built already, you know, because that she
right.
was saying she wanted to build a border wall or whatever. And no one batted an eye. But when he says he wants to do it, he's literally Adolf Hitler, who has a Jewish daughter. So.
Well, and that's true, right? Bill Clinton was trying to, he was trying to do the smart
yeah.
wall or something like that.
Right. Yeah. They've been wanting to do that for a while. So.
Yeah. It's.
Took a Trump to do it, I guess, or he wants to do it or something.
Right. It's really interesting because, like, there's, I was reading this book, I think it was called The Political Mind, where they were talking about how basically the Democrats and the Republicans are kind of like the mother and the father figure. So like the Republicans are like, you know, the you know, strict right. father, get a job kind of thing. And then the Republicans are like, oh, we're going to take care of everybody. You know, that and if you look at kind of like how they campaign, I think that's very true. And if you look at the way people vote, it's almost like, of course, this gets rid of what I talked about earlier, where it's the younger people who hate, you know, whoever was in charge. But it's kind of that same pendulum of of, hey, Dad, can I have ice cream? Why don't you go ask your mom? Or no. And then, you know, they go ask their mom anyway. And it's like, Mom, can I have ice cream? And, you know, yes or no. And you just keep going back and forth until you get a yes. And it seems that's almost kind of like how voters behave there, too. But it's kind of interesting that it's like, OK, so just because they have a different way of getting things done doesn't mean they're not part of the same household and they're not dragging you along on the same ultimate, you know, ultimate goal of, you know, being your master. You know, and it's like, at what point are we going to grow up and say, hey, you know, we can live our own lives. We don't need parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really. That's an excellent metaphor, man. I've never really thought of it that way. I've always thought about, depending, you know, Republican, Democrat, there's some minor differences, but for the most part, the same shit ends up happening.
Right.
I think I've witnessed that. But to think that they work for the same house, it kind of reminds me of, I think it was when Barbara Bush died, and everybody's at the funeral, and that picture has, like, Obama, Bush, Clinton, like, all the old presidents, they're all together, like, laughing. And I keep thinking about James Carlin saying, it's a club, and, like, you're not in it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's so telling. And then you have, like, the, you've got the, I just saw a question in here, I got distracted, but you have, like, the, shit, now I totally forgot what I was going to say. let me bring up this question. So, well, I'm reading a couple other comments. Ask yourself why civics was replaced with social studies. I remember social studies, like, I had that when I was, like, that was, like, elementary school, I want to say. Maybe middle school. Yeah. But then I remember we had a government class, which it wasn't called civics, but I would think that's what civics was. And it was, I had kind of a crazy teacher, but he seemed like a radical. So maybe that's why I had a good experience with it. But he, you know, he was kind of, you know, teaching us a little bit about government. But at the same time, it's like, you know, if you really want to change something, how do you do it? How does the money change hands? Like, they didn't teach us any of that stuff.
Yeah, really. I think when I was a kid, we had social studies. I mean, I grew up here in Florida, and Florida is notoriously known for some of our lower quality in public schools and indoctrination. But I remember middle school was pretty piss poor. We had to have, like, all the books talked about the Soviet Union as if it was still existing, but it didn't exist anymore. So, like, my geography class was, like, the guy had to, like, write on the board, like, draw out country. It was so shitty. He had to explain to, like, kids, like, that these countries don't exist anymore. And to this day, when someone says, like, oh, I'm from the Czech Republic, and I'm like, oh, Czechoslovakia? They're like, no, that doesn't exist anymore. Like, I still have to think back, you know, my broken elementary books that don't work anymore. And our social studies class wasn't even, I mean, you know, most of it was just kind of don't throw a desk at the teacher and you pass. It was not, we didn't really learn much. But whatever we did learn, you end up hearing kind of echo. And as, like, an adult with access to the internet, you know, it's not just Facebook and porn. We can read things, and I read about alternative history. And then when I hear somebody say something, you know, about history, it's almost like an echo from that, like, that one thing you learned in school about how after the Great Depression, the New Deal just fixed everything. And then the World War II fixed the Depression. And then we fought the Nazis because if we didn't, you know, they would nuke us and we'd be speaking German if it wasn't for you kind of, like, after you learn a lot about history, you learn things are considerably different and not as, like, heroic as, I guess, they've been painted out
right.
to be.
Right. Whoever wins the war gets to write the history books, right?
Yeah, really. Don't tell them about the firebombings of Tokyo. Thank God we won the war.
Yeah, it's so amazing. Like, I mean, I remember that was a big deal when I first learned that, you know, what we did to the... Well, I hate using the word. That's another thing, right? They teach you to say we. Like, I was there and I participated in this. What early Americans did to Native Americans.
Right.
Like, I remember, like, when I was probably in high school. No, was it high school? I was probably, like, around high school where I started, like, saying, like, hey, this Thanksgiving holiday is actually kind of offensive, and, like, started, you know, begrudgingly participating in it. but it's like, why wasn't that even really taught? Like, I remember, like, one of like, I don't know if you remember, what was that movie? The was it the Munsters? No, it was the, what's the Addams Family.
Addams Family.
Where they did, like, they had the school play at summer camp, and then.
Yeah, that's right. Then, that kind of opened your eyes for a second. You're like, oh, shit.
And I'm like, why does it take a movie like that to kind of, like, snap you and wake you up when I went to so many years of school already?
Yeah. What do you think about school? They teach a bunch of bullshit, like Columbus Day. They teach all these, like, kind of faux holidays. That, you know, he discovered America. I don't know. A lot of those things, they had reasoning behind it. But then as an adult, you realize, no, that's all wrong.
So,
why?
So yeah, they tell us he discovered America, and then you find out he never even got to America.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, and I actually read there's like a good story that comes out, like the real story about him, you know, every Columbus Day it starts circulating, and, you know, it talks about all the islands that he went to, how he wiped out entire populations, and then he went back to where was it, Spain, and basically said, oh yes, make me your hero, and then so he started, like, writing the history books because he was in control of that. So, you know, he told his own story, and that's the story that's now propagated into our bullshit history books.
It's funny, man.
That's fucking insane. There's a who else did it? What's his name? John Leguizamo.
Nice.
He did a Netflix like the real Latin history.
Right.
And it was pretty awesome. I don't know if you've ever seen any of his stuff, but he's like, when he puts together like a whole story on stage, you know, when he tells like a 2 or 3 hour story, it's like,
right,
he does an amazing job. So that was a really good one. It's so fascinating, like, you know, growing up in Los Angeles, all the streets are Spanish names.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
here too in Florida.
Yeah. And it's like why is that? But we never really kind of question it. It's just kind of like we take it for granted, like that's what it is. And it's like, there is a nasty history behind that.
Yeah, I mean, history is pretty nasty the more you look at it, but right. At the same time, you know, for what it's worth, it worked out pretty well, you know, no matter who was involved. Well, depending on you, actually, I don't want to say the same about Native Americans. They got a short end of the stick there, but not only because they were, you know, put into concentrated pockets of the U.S., but also because they received more benefits than any other person, and they've been in poverty because of it. You can see a good John Stossel story about that. They've been enabled worse than any other class of people. It's pretty sad.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, that's a classic welfare example, and it's really great to see, like, because I think in that episode you were talking about, there was a guy who was like, he started a bank so he could start lending to his neighbors so that they could actually start improving. But I think one of the interesting things, I don't know exactly how this works, but I guess so they're considered an independent nation, according to all these treaties that were broken by the United States side. But it's like, if they want full rights within the United States, they have to become United States citizens.
Hmm.
And it's like,
mind around that one.
Yeah. And it's like, once you do that, it's kind of like, okay, now you're in the system, and like, you're, you know, now, I mean, shit, who's got it worse?
Yeah. Right.
It's hard to say. Funny.
They have quite an interesting position they're in. I think I saw some video about, there was a highway that went through like the native reservation or something. And this guy just took like a bulldozer. He made his own dirt road to go to his place. And I think he got around it because there's just some legal technicality about the reservation, whereas the U.S. but not the U.S. I don't know, but they take full advantage of that with his casinos, right?
Yeah, I think that's really the idea, is that it's supposed to be their own sovereign territory.
And they can do drugs too, right? Or they can do ayahuasca, or there's some like loophole.
Yeah, they
there.
Can do. I think peyote is one that they use. and it's like, I think it is, you know, they get to write their own laws. I mean, I don't know too much about the details of that. I could probably actually find someone to have on the show. That would be an interesting talk.
Yeah.
But I've seen things where, like, you know, a sheriff can't go into the reservation land, and they have their own, you know, their own kind of police. Sometimes they work cooperatively. Sometimes they hate each other. You know, it's really interesting. And actually, like, now that you bring it up, I would like to know more about it, because this is another one of those things that, as much as I do know, I'm trying to think, like, okay, how do I know this? And I'm like, okay, I probably learned this in a movie somewhere, so it's probably like 90% inaccurate.
Right. Yeah.
which is, man, it's so, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, start doing this. You might do this too. Like when you watch a movie now, it's like, oh yeah, this is propaganda. They're trying to teach us that police are good or this or that. And it's like, it's like, whether it's intentional or not, that's what's happening. It's conditioning you to think and associate certain things with certain other things. And it's like, how many movies have, like, I used to watch, like, what was it? Lethal Weapon. And what were those guys doing? They were kicking in doors. We don't have a warrant. Oh, it's okay. We'll figure out how to, you know, we have probable cause. Oh, we smell, you know, and it's like they make them, or Beverly Hills Cop, same kind of thing. And it's like you kind of get used to it. And it's like, yeah, fuck the Constitution. Like they're preventing these guys from catching the bad guys. And it kind of like gets people to side with that. And it's like, that's not really a good thing, especially. And then you start looking at it like, wait a minute, they're trying to catch these like criminal drug kingpins. But are these people really that bad? I mean, they're just entrepreneurs buying a product and selling it at a higher price, right? They're farmers. Yeah. They're, you know, it's funny, like the way that these characters are exaggerated in these movies, it's almost like, you know, like, I'm just trying to think of like a scene of one of these movies, like, you know, they get like really dramatic, like, yes, we're going to make this deal. And if you don't like the deal, we're going to cut your hands off. We're going to start with your pinky finger. And like, it's like, yeah, they probably don't have conversations like that. Even the cartels are running around killing people. Like, it's probably more like, ah, that asshole burned me, cut his head off.
Yeah. I wish it was so dramatic.
Yeah. And it's like, all that drama kind of like makes you think like, oh, these people are really, really bad. You know, even the lighting that they use is like, you don't even realize it, but they're like making you think, oh, this guy is so evil because of the lighting and the camera angle and everything else. And it's like, man, imagine, this might be a good experiment. Take some of those really dramatic movie scenes where you see like these crazy drug dealers and just reshoot them and just have them say things like kind of normally in normal lighting shot on like a camera cell phone or I don't know, and just to like show like, yeah, it's not really so dramatic in real life.
There's some pretty creative videos on YouTube. I think there's one for Mary Poppins, but they make it into a horror movie just because they change the music and some of the lighting.
Exactly.
Yeah, the media has a lot to play about kind of conditioning our minds, news especially, but I think only old people still watch television news, so they kind of they're more susceptible to some of the really like transparent ideas they're trying to project. But now that I think everyone is on the internet, and I like to think the overall intelligence of everybody too, just being in the kind of the age of computers, have made us all kind of smarter and hip to this kind of thing. And like I said, libertarians, we kind of have a broader perspective because we're not exactly in that echo chamber of like one kind of solid form of media. So we can kind of criticize everything if we wanted to. So when we watch like movies especially, or even I've noticed, I mean, I love movies. I've always loved movies, but even video games, we're talking about how it's permeated into video games. It's kind of funny. And I can't help but think that a lot of the people leaving universities are kind of, you know, woke, and they want to bring those woke ideas to media companies. And that's kind of crippled places like Vox, or I look at what's another famous one that I used to really like? Vice, man. Vice was so cool several years ago. It was like really hip, really fucking in your face, edgy, you know, all this fun, kind of cool, crazy stories, and now it's all like woke and just dumb, you know, social justice kind of stuff. That I think if you've ever read the comment section in Facebook, it's actually funnier to read the comments about how many bitter people just tear it apart. I mean, one of them. I love doing it too. It's fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, you kind of can see it for what it's worth. I think the latest one recently everyone's up in arms about is the Little Mermaid movie. I guess she's a black chick now. Everyone's losing their minds. I think it's funny that Disney's willing to risk its IP on something like this, but I guess they're just doing all movies now live action, and you know, they want to try being woke here. Let's let the ticket sales, I guess, ultimately dictate what people think. I mean, if it bombs, then obviously the entire country is a raging racist, or maybe they didn't want to see their favorite character as, you know, as a black chick. You know, or maybe not. Maybe people don't really care. Let's see. I don't know. It doesn't mean that much to me, but it is kind of weird. I can't, like, I see people's sides. They've grown up a Little Mermaid, you know, to see it as somebody else who looks nothing like Little Mermaid could be, you know, kind of shocking. Well,
but at the same time, like, for adults who are going to see it, it's like, you're not going to enjoy it anyway, except for, like, you know, because Disney likes to put in the dirty jokes for the adults to enjoy it. But
Yeah.
Like, for the most part, it's going to be kids seeing it for the first time, and they're not, they don't give a fuck.
Yeah, they don't know. Exactly. You have a good point there.
Yeah, so, you know, and they're going to want to see it, even if their parents are, like, so pissed off that, like, oh, it's a black girl. Yeah, like, the kids are going to be like, I want to see it, I want to see it. And they're going to be like, okay, I guess I gotta, we got to see it. So, yeah, that's all. But, you know, somebody made a comment the other day, too, and I thought it was a really good point. They said, is anybody actually really mad about this, or are we just seeing posts making fun of how people are mad at it? And then I was like, yeah, you know what? That's true. All the posts I've seen were like people saying like, I can't believe people are upset about this. And I haven't really seen any posts saying like, yeah, this is stupid.
Yeah. Maybe that's part of it too. You know, purposely trying to create some outrage, purposely trying to create some, you know, controversy so people talk about it. I think I wouldn't even have known
it existed if I didn't start seeing these posts. So maybe that's part of it.
I'm not up to the latest in Disney live-action movies. I haven't seen any of them, actually. I'm not really that interested. But, you know, I think recently they were talking about Jaden Smith, Will Smith's kid, coming out and nobly feeding the homeless with his food truck some delicious low-calorie vegan food. And I thought, wow, that's great. Another person kind of grandstanding for the homeless. But what's he really getting out of this? And then somebody in the comment section, like God bless the comment section, pointed out he has a new album coming out. So this is his way of getting, you know, relevant in the news by trying to feed homeless people. And then naturally, by people kind of talking bad about it as being really fake and bullshit, it doesn't matter. It gives them more trending. The more people comment, the more people who are angry. When you see a comment in the news, you can kind of now at this point, you can smell it. It's going to be so over the top that people want to respond. They want to react to it. And they know that people are going to like be chomping and typing and talking about it and arguing back and forth. They love that because it makes relevancy and it gets clicks.
Right. Yeah. You know that. And one other thing that you pointed out is you said it's low calorie food that is giving out to the homeless. And that's, I would think, I mean, like, you know, when people are hungry and you want to give them food, you usually try to go for high calorie stuff just because
makes sense that, but if you look at Jaden Smith, he's not exactly a model of pleasant health. So if someone who's who's borderline has an eating disorder, handing out vegan food to starving people to me is just kind of like, let you have the most pretentious food in the world starving people.
I'll give it to him that, you know, at least he chose to give out food instead of, you know, I don't know, doing something more destructive, but that's totally what it is.
In the end, no matter what, even if it's completely self-serving for his album or to make him look noble or something, at least, you know, people are still getting a bite to eat. At least he did his own money,
like,
I should say.
You know, at least he's feeding the homeless instead of licking ice cream. Like,
good idea.
Yeah.
And with his own money, hopefully, too, because at least the government didn't have to do it. That's better.
Absolutely. So there was one thing I wanted to go back and point out when we were talking about movies how they train you to think. And I was thinking about like laugh tracks on you ever watch these old shows, like the 70s show was one that I used to watch a lot. And you know, anything,
they teach you when to laugh.
They teach you when to laugh, but at the same time, if you ever watch one of those shows without the laugh track, they're not funny at all.
Oh, ouch. Yeah. That's funny.
It's like they tell you that they're worse than dad jokes. They're like,
They are.
You know, for the most part, and it's like, you know, sometimes there's a funny punchline at the end of a show or something that will really make you get up and laugh. But like throughout the entire show, you laugh like 30 or 40 times and you're just you're trained. It's like the sheep effect, right? The herd mentality, like everybody else is laughing, I better laugh. And you don't even know you're doing it. And that's fucking crazy.
I know what you mean, and I think, I don't know if situational comedies like sitcoms are even really a thing, but my father is from Germany, and whenever we had the TV on as a kid, he just despised those type of shows, and I didn't know why, because I'm just like, whatever, I'm like watching TV all the time. He doesn't understand why the fuck there's this laughter going on during the middle of the show, and you think about that, we're like, why the fuck is this like this laugh track? And for a while, I thought they were like a real studio audience. But I guess they have a machine. It's like a piano that you kind of play laughter on. They kind of made an art form out of just faux laughs.
Right.
And it's pretty dumb. And like you said, the humor is really not that great anyway. But then again, I don't really want to say that it's not funny, because I think my version of funny, your version of funny might be on a different scope or a different level. Right. Tell me this happened to you, because I've been in a lot of movies like this, where like you've seen the fucking movie in the trailer, and they play every single stupid funny part in the trailer. So you're like, I know it's going to happen. It's going to happen, and it just happened, and everyone laughs. I'm like, did you not see the right. trailer? And then like the quality of humor too, I think it was Burn After Reading. Great movie. And I'm watching the movie, and then George Clooney says something really witty. I forget what it was. And I'm like laughing, you know, through the nose like a nerd in the middle of the, and no one's laughing. But then someone slips on a piano pill and everyone's like, ha, 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 ha. And I'm like, that's not funny. It's stupid. But then I'm the only one laughing at the wittiest part of the movie, and the whole theater's like silent.
Man.
So yeah, people like those sitcoms, and they have to have a laugh track, I guess, to make them feel comfortable about laughing at like stupid right. like butt jokes or something.
That was like, you know, so like I look at movies like that, right? I remember that movie, and I remember it was like, it was kind of like an oddball movie that wasn't hugely popular, but right. it was like, it was my kind of movie, because it was kind of different, and it was a little bit yeah. smarter than, you know, yeah. just like dumb comedy. But I like, it makes me wonder, like, did they throw in all like the banana peels and everything? So like, okay, we're going to make this really great story, but we're going to throw in some like stupid, like, you know, fart and dick jokes so that the yeah. average people will laugh, because
they have to,
they don't want to engage.
Fart joke. People just howl with laughter. Yeah. They got to have it takes no brain. It takes no creativity, but as long as someone's farts, everyone's loving the movie.
Right. And that's like, if you think about it, it's like, what's really that funny about a fart, except like you're conditioned to laugh at it from when you're a kid. Like,
yeah,
I mean, that's really laugh. It. Man. Yeah, it's so crazy. I'm like totally losing track over here. I want to see where we're at on time. I guess we still got a few minutes left.
So you know what, Dan? Let me stop you right there. I know you're running for president, man.
Yeah.
And you talked about growing up in California. Why don't you let me know? I mean, I'm sure your audience might know already, but what can you tell me? Can you tell me more, for me personally, so I understand the catalyst that helped you? Like, what was your line that crossed?
Man, it's always kind of been a struggle, because I've always been like, even in school, I was like, you know, I challenge the rules. Like, why? Right. Why do I have to do this? Why do I have to do homework? Like, I get it. Like, if I pass the test, this was a big one. Right. I would never do my homework, because I would get home and I'd want to play video games or like play with the computer, which actually turned out to be better for my education, because I was learning to program and play, you know, games and like that kind of stuff.
Take that.
But yeah, but then I turned into a software engineer, and I make a lot of money doing it. Nothing from what I learned from school. But like, they would always be like, you know, hey, your homework is going to count for 50% of your grade, and your tests are going to count for the other 50%. And I would just like never do my homework. So I'd be like, well, I mean, if I can pass the tests, what does it matter?
Right.
And this was like, you know, there were always these things. And like, I tried to sell candy bars. I would buy them at the Smart and Final for like half price. And then I'd sell like, awesome. You know, the big king size bars for like $1, because the other kids were doing it, but they were doing it with like this little shitty, you know, plain old chocolate bar. I had Snickers and Butterfingers. And I got caught, and that was illegal apparently, because I didn't have, you know, it wasn't part of a school fundraiser.
That happened to me too. What the fuck's up with it? They don't want people like cashing in at school?
Yeah, exactly. They're like, no, this is my territory. You don't sell drugs on my corner.
Right. Let me tell you, if anyone listening, if you're still in high school, and Halloween is free fucking candy. Do what you got to do. Get the candy. And in school, I would clean up selling bootleg Halloween candy.
Right. And, or you know what else? If you go the day after drugs. Halloween, you can some cheap, like dirt cheap candy.
I'm all about that, the discount candy, man. Easter, too. You want to get some Easter candy? They have like these special chocolates you can't get any time during the year. I get them after Easter, and I hoard them all year.
Absolutely. So there's just always been this, you know, when I got older, it was traffic tickets. And I've just always been kind of like, you know, why? I'm not hurting anybody. What the fuck is your problem? You know, it's interesting too, because, and maybe this is where I got my, you know, libertarian, my humanitarian side is, you know, 'cause my mom was always helping out with charities and, you know, trying to help, less fortunate kids and everything else. So she, you know, I kind of learned that from her. My grandfather was like really big into helping animals. You know, so like that kind of got a humanitarian, and like, believe me, I went through phases of like, why doesn't the government just print money and they could end homelessness? and my mom would be like, well, because of inflation. And I'm like, what the fuck is inflation? you know, so I went through like all these different phases, and you know, it was really interesting, but yeah, it's just like, I think it's always kind of been inside of me to say like, hey, you know, something's not right here. Who are these people to tell me how I have to live my life? It just kind of never made sense to me. And so I can't say there's one defining moment, but yeah, it's like all of that just kind of added up. And then eventually I was like, you know, I think the turning point for me to actually run for president was when I was when Gary Johnson pissed me off. So thank you, Gary Johnson.
Hey, there you go.
Because, you know, at that point I was like, yeah, I'll support anybody who can take this message and get it to this many people. And then when Gary Johnson did what he did, I was like, well, fuck it. I guess nobody can do it except for me. So now I got to stand up and do it. So that's why I'm in this.
Something good from Gary Johnson.
Right.
Yeah, for me, man, it was, I think, a lifetime of just kind of being anti-authority in general. You know, I just kind of had that sense. But I was against left-right systems. I was against politics themselves because I just thought they're too narrow. It kind of pigeonholed you in a certain frame of thinking. And I stayed away from it as long as I could because I didn't think it was productive and I didn't think it was anything I wanted to be a part of. And it wasn't until, I mean, this might be a catalyst for a lot of people, but 9/11 threw me kind of into the political sphere because politics affected my life head on. Where I remember that day 9/11 happened, and I remember freaking out saying, what the fuck is next? Like, there's an attack on the Pentagon now? Like, are we going to get nuked?
How old were you when that happened?
I was 18, just turned 18 and going to college, and I was on the way to college. And I never forget because I listened to Howard Stern in the morning, and I drove, it was a pretty far drive, and I remember like, all this shit was going down. Of course, I was late to class. It was like 9 or something. And I heard this on the news, and I'm like, you know, peeled to the news because as a kid, too, growing up, kind of like Cold War era, a lot of like World War III movies, you know, kind of you're always thinking about nuclear holocaust any moment. And I'm hearing about, you know, planes crashing into buildings, you know, what the fuck is going on? I'm kind of like nailed to this radio show, and I have to walk into class late. I'm burning to know what's going on, and I wanted to just let everybody know. But I remember consciously in my heart, if I told everybody, it was one of those things that no one would care about except me. And so all I want to do is finish class so I can hear about it. I didn't know it would be the greatest, hugest, you know, event like of our lifetime, our Pearl Harbor. And when I got out and I heard that they attacked the Pentagon, I thought, holy shit, you know, that's where they keep, you know, the nuclear warheads. Like, what's going on? Are we going to like die in the next hour? Right. I don't know. It was pandemonium, and it was that moment. After that, you know, there was an anthrax scare. Then I'm like, good Lord, we got anthrax to worry about. Now, all these years of not paying attention, I have to now invest, like, what is going on? Now we're going to war, like Iraq, like weapons of mass destruction. You know, all those kind of things, naturally I questioned everything. And as that progressed, it was almost like everyone was like, fuck Bush. And I was like, yeah, I have my own fuck Bush, but it seems like it was just a cool thing to do or say, because when I asked them about it, they didn't really have any personal reason. It was just kind of like a trendy thing.
Right.
And I realized that the anti-war movement that was around for a long time, which I was always like, vehemently against war. It was just kind of like this, like, you know, based on maybe movies I watch. I don't know if there were left-leaning people who made the movies.
I remember Forrest Gump got me very anti-war.
Yeah, that, and there's also other old movies too, like All Quiet in the Western Front. I mean, there's Johnny Got His Gun. You know, Metallica made that song about that one.
Right.
But it was those kind of things that kind of, I was already against the war and I didn't want it to happen. And then, you know, when Obama had his turn, he was kind of preaching peace and he was preaching the Constitution. Imagine that.
Right.
I was on the impression that, like, I've always kind of liked the third party because they never had a chance of winning and it was against a two-party system. But, like, I wasn't for Obama, but if it happened, like, you know, let's give the guy a chance. And then obviously I realized that was, you know, a complete bullshit scam.
Right.
But I've watched that all those people who are anti-war were just really anti-Bush because they stopped caring about, like, international spying, about torture, about Guantanamo Bay, about the seven wars that happened afterward. And that's when I started, like, getting more into kind of, you know, watching more videos online, watching documentaries. And ironically enough, it was the Aaron Russo. Freedom to Fascism.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes, that was an awesome one. That actually really got me into like understanding the IRS.
Right. Yeah, that one really kind of like rubbed me like a certain way. The way he was saying, and you look at it back on now, it's so funny because it's, you know, it's basically and digestible enough for anybody to really enjoy it. But I watched it and I was like, yeah, man. And the paranoia that I feel when a cop car is behind me, and the overarching government that's just growing bigger and bigger. And, you know, a lot of people clown Alex Jones now, and he's a delightfully lovable, hilarious, crazy character. Not to be taken too seriously, but he's Alex Jones, and he had a great impact, too, back then. He was kind of, like, fighting the good fight.
I think he used to be more... He could be taken more serious back in the day, and then he just kind of, like, he got worse. I don't know what happened.
Maybe he got too big.
Yeah,
too,
he was like, hey, I can make money with this.
He became an empire, man. He really invented alternative media, too. I mean, we all have to give a hat to this guy. But at the same time, I stopped watching because I started watching more, I guess, intellectual type shows that kind of honed my libertarianism. But I remember the first time I actually changed. There's a lot of people listening that who know someone like this, talk to these people who said, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I don't even like titles. That's the kind of person you want to talk to, because I was that person who didn't want to be in a title. That's a libertarian walking. They just don't know it. And I learned enough about this kind of stuff, I realized, you know what? I'm comfortable with this title. I'm comfortable with being called libertarian. And I remember going on Facebook. This is like 2008. And putting in there libertarian. You had to type it in because there wasn't a slot for it. And I remember an ex-girlfriend of mine being all pissy and being like, you spelled liberal wrong. And I'm like, no, this is libertarian. This is fucking something different. And I've watched it become from something that I was alone in a chat room, alone in a comment section. And then all of a sudden, one day, you kind of meet another neckbeard. You know, you meet someone else and you kind of tip your fedora and you're like, hello, sir. There's another one out there. And another one. And then another one. And then before you know it, you're meeting them in person. You're like, holy fucking shit. I never thought in my life I'd meet another
These
person.
People are
like
real.
This.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then, you know, to we are now, where there's, it's the largest third party, you know, we're out there where, you know, people are thinking about it. We've done a lot of work. You can God bless Ron Paul for that too. I mean, how can I even extend a conversation without giving great one to the dear doctor? He obviously was like, you know, a huge influence on me to really like turn me on the true libertarianism. And I volunteered for his campaign. I even got a lovely letter from his wife and her cookbook. And I was out there fighting the good fight. And when he lost, I learned a lot in general about politics, but also all the things that he taught me, like in general, like if he even wanted to win. But he left his message with me and a reading list. And when I see a lot of Bernie supporters, they got disillusioned too. I feel for them because they really believed in this nonsense. But when they lost, they didn't get an ideology. They didn't get a list of books to really carry them and realize it wasn't even about the presidency, man. It was about something bigger than that. They just kind of got left in the dirt. Whereas Ron Paul, because of him, it turned me on to, you know, Rothbard. It turned me on to like economics books. It turned me on to something completely different, more than just the political idea of libertarianism.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's so much to come from that. And there was even we got to wrap this up in a minute, but I just want to add this thought in here about, you know, when Ron Paul was out and Bernie Sanders was in, there were a lot of Ron Paul supporters who went to Bernie Sanders and nobody could understand, you know, why this was happening. But it was actually like I started to get it. It's actually very simple. Ron Paul was out there saying like, yes, it's all these big, evil, corrupt people and they're ripping us off. He was yelling about the problem. And then Bernie Sanders came in with that same message. Yes, there are all these big, wealthy people ripping us off and they're all the problem. Their solutions were complete opposites. But to most of the people who are not that involved in politics, or, you know, maybe it was just the people who were just beginning to get into Ron Paul, who, you know, that election cycle was over and they were like, OK, who else is out here for next time? They went to Bernie Sanders and they heard kind of the same message. And they were like, oh, this is going to be Ron Paul number two. And I think that's kind of, you know, because it was just that tip of the iceberg that they saw. They didn't get, you know, they didn't get the rest of the message that so many other people got. So I think that's really important to see, actually, because I think that's, you know, that's important information for us to know as far as, you know, how do we get our foot in the door with so many people who need to have this information, who need to learn this.
Yeah. One thing I guess I can draw a parallel to them both, which is hard to do, but I could say that they were both political outsiders, even though they were both working in politics for a long time. They were kind of against the grain, whereas Bernie Sanders was always independent, and Ron Paul was a Republican who was a nail in the government's foot the entire time he was there for 30 years, and been saying the same thing. Right. I mean, imagine this sweet old man, for since the 80s saying the same exact thing, and then all of a sudden the internet exists and he didn't even know how to use a computer. He didn't even know what's going on. All of a sudden he's filling out like huge universities and everyone's screaming at him like a rock star, and he's just been saying the same thing. That's awesome. And then you have someone like Bernie, he comes around, and even with Ron Paul, there's got to be a degree of kind of cult of personality that everyone just kind of likes him because he's likable and he kind of says some nice things. And I wish those people kind of took it further than that. You know, I wish they actually listened to his message and then maybe kept reading. And I know those people are out there. They're like sleeper cells or looking for the next Ron Paul. They're looking for maybe his son. But like, you know, his son is cool and I do root for him and everything, but he's not his old man.
Right, right.
You know, but I don't know if we'll ever have another Ron Paul ever. And even Bernie Sanders, for what it's worth, he had his moment, but it crashed and burned. And it's seeing him flail his arms on stage now. Yeah, it's he. Yeah, thank you. his message is old, man. Seeing him trying to do the same thing now, he's been canceled. I don't think he has the same gumption as he did before. He just looks like a raving old lunatic. And right. I think the only thing that's trying to capture some of the millennial vote is Andrew Yang. And that's somebody who's, you know, he's got his own set of problems. If you think you can just bribe somebody with $12,000 for a vote, man, that's sad if anyone falls for that.
I think a lot of people are. It's kind of disturbing, actually.
Even libertarians, I've heard, been trying to talk about that nonsense.
Yeah, so there are some libertarians, and then the others, I think they're collapsitarians, so they're just like, let's do it.
The chips fall as they may, if it advances it. Hey, you know what? I'm never gonna knock a collapsitarian. They might be right, but that's their technique. You know what I mean? I understand that too. I'm not gonna knock it necessarily, but at the same time, I can't stand for that. I don't think I'd like to do that. No.
Yeah. No. It definitely would not be a pretty society to live in for several years if that happened.
That's bad.
So if we could avoid that, that would be great. But you know, at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, yeah, if we keep trying to resist, then it's like it'll never collapse and we'll just be stuck in this tug of war. So
it'll definitely collapse. It has to. Every empire must fall. But I think what we want to do, my dream anyway, is to see it go out with a whimper. I want to see it shrink down to the size of
controlled demolition.
Yeah, controlled demolition of the government. That'd be great. But eventually, at its rate, you know, all empires will fall. So it's really up to the, you know, to the people. But we have seen an enormous rise of the third party. People want, they're sick of the establishment. It's getting sicker and sicker to the point where, you know, they're willing to believe any bullshit, but they just don't want to see another politician do it. To the point where we elected, but the United States elected a celebrity billionaire president, an evil villain who's now like the president. That's what we wanted, so we got it. So right. Who's next? I don't know. Who's going to do it? How do you go up from here, you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, Eric, it's been awesome talking with you. These are some pretty interesting conversations we've had. Maybe I'll have you on again sometime.
Dan, it's been a pleasure. I'd love to.
Go check out the link in the comments or the link on the screen, even though you can't click it. Go check out the Taxation is Theft pins and support his project. And of course, go to my site, support the Taxation is Theft store, support my 2020 presidential election run. It's going to be a great time. And until next time, Taxation is Theft.
Taxation is Theft always.
Taxation is Theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
Roads.
You boys like Mexico?